Hello and welcome to the Just Fly Performance Podcast, episode 16. Today on the show, I have Mark Watts, former education director for Elite FTS. Today's episode is brought to you by Simply Faster. Simply Faster is an online athletic performance technology shop distributing items such as the FreeLap Timing System, GymAware, K-Box, 1080 Sprint, and the Speedmat. I've gotten many of these items from Simply Faster and can confidently say that they make today's best training technology available to everybody. The FreeLap Timing System has revolutionized both my practices and my athlete assessments, allowing me to look at the 10-meter fly capability of dozens of athletes in a matter of seconds. It is wireless, compact, portable, and incredibly versatile. The K-Box and 1080 Sprint are fantastic tools for any coach looking to build speed, agility, and implement training scenarios that go beyond the traditional weight room. The 1080 Sprint is being used by great coaches training some of the fastest sprinters in the world, and it truly represents high-performance speed training. I can personally attest that Simply Faster's customer service is second to none. Christopher at Simply Faster responds quickly to queries, and anyone who makes a purchase from Simply Faster is in good hands. If you want to acquire some of the best high-tech training equipment available, stop by simplyfaster.com. That's simply with an I, faster.com. They are the future of coaching technology. Thanks for tuning in today. Welcome to episode 16. So this week's guest is Mark Watts. Mark, as I mentioned in the intro before, is the former education director at Elite FTS. He is also a strength coach of 15 years. And Mark also served in the U.S. Marine Corps, is a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, and is also one of the most well-read and wisest guys I know in this field. And he currently serves as a fifth grade school teacher in Columbus, Ohio. Much of the material on this podcast, the Just Fly Performance Podcast, has to do with biomechanics, sets, reps, periodization, similar material. And for this particular episode, I wanted to go a bit of a different direction into something that's more global that all of us who do prescribe the sets and reps do, which is coaching, leadership, and personal development. You can't be a coach without addressing those aspects. And for that particular topic, I really couldn't think of anyone better than Mark. And many coaches are familiar with Mark's columnist work on Elite FTS, particularly his ideas on the professional aspects of sports performance and being a strength coach. Today, we're going to be talking about that in the field of strength and conditioning. We're going to be talking a little bit about leadership, personal development, how we leave a lasting impact on athletes, and much more. Mark is such a great guy to talk to with this stuff. I love recording this. I think you guys are really going to like it. So here we go. All right, Mark, it's great to have you on the show today. Thanks for being here, man.
Joel, thanks for having me on. I mean, it's an honor, and I appreciate you taking the time to have me on, and hopefully I'll be able to make some connections with some people and just try to give you as much information I can from all the mistakes I've made as you know over my career. So, but I really appreciate you having me on. It means a lot.
Awesome. So we'll get right to it here. Tell us about your background in the strength and conditioning education industry, where you've been and where you're going now.
Well, for me, it really started with, you know, I went to a small inner city high school, and from there I went in the Marine Corps, and I always knew when I was in the Marine Corps and I always knew I had to, you know, at least at some point, try to play college football again. And that's really, once I played and I was, you know, a little bit older than everybody else and I was a walk on at Division II, I didn't play much, but I love football. I love training. And I think that's how a lot of people get into it. And, so that was the bridge to coaching, because I ended up becoming a student coach and a GA, and football and strength and conditioning was always, they were always hand in hand with everything we did. And I thought that, you know, there was a lot to learn from both, and I was able throughout my career once I was done at Clarion University, I was a GA there. And I spent 3 years coaching there, went to Allegheny College for a year, and same thing, D-line and strength and conditioning. And then I ended up getting a job, you know, at Denison University, another D3 school in Ohio. And that was a defensive coordinator and a strength coach for all the sports. And so obviously, you know, at the time I thought this was great, but, not knowing that, you know, on top of that, I was going to have to teach. And I think that's kind of that D3 model where, let's see how much we can get out of this person, and how much can you, it's kind of like the, the linchpin, model that, Seth Godin talks about with, trying to get yourself in a situation where you're, not expendable. And I was able to stay with both, but I knew at some point that, from the one thing about, coaching football, and I think when you're watching, especially, with the, with especially that high level, at the Division I level, and even all the way down, there's always more time you can spend. There's always more time you can spend on film. There's always more time you can spend. You can always make that extra recruiting call. And I didn't think that that was going to be conducive for me long term. When you're young and single, I mean, that's what you're doing. I mean, you're just working, and everybody, calls the grind now, but. Back then, I couldn't hashtag that. I couldn't post it. They all, now it's like everybody wants to post how hard they work, but that was the norm, for guys like us back then. And, and I knew that I wanted to get into strength and conditioning. The problem was, just like every strength coach, now I just didn't have the experience. And the only way that I could get experiences was to volunteer. And my last year at Denison, I interned at the University of Tulsa. I interviewed a phone interview at the time with Rusty Bernie and Josh Stoner, and they hired me. And then Pat Ivey, the head coach, actually went to Missouri. He took Josh with him. I come in, and Sean Griswold was there, and we ended up, I built a pretty good relationship with both of those guys, and we've been friends since. Sean's been a very good influence for me. And of course, I came back the next year, coached my last year at Denison. So people didn't understand, like, why you're a full-time coach, why would you do an internship in the summer? And of course I was finishing my second master's degree online at the same time. People just think you're nuts. I'm like, but I don't know any other way. Like, I didn't think it was out of the norm. I think that's what you had to do. I want to get a master's degree in exercise science, because my first master's degree was in elementary education, and I needed to get experience. You could say all you want to, an exercise science degree or being certified doesn't mean you can coach. And I needed that experience, because I didn't know what I didn't know back then, and of course, when I first started, I knew everything. And, the longer you coach, the more you realize you don't know. And, so that was a good experience for me. And then I was fortunate enough to get a full-time job at West Point. And I was in charge of about 7 sports out there. I had kind of my own weight room that was off the, the beaten path. Was at the athletic headquarters, right below in the basement. And but Scott Swanson and Corey Crane and Gabe Harrington, all these guys were just huge influence for me. And they really kind of made me realize you have to know why you're doing what you're doing. I would do things, and I would put things in my programming. I had no idea why. Because someone else said they're doing it. And and you realize you have to be able to justify why. You might not have the same answer. While you're doing this, you might not have to have the answer, but you have to have an answer in order to really, produce, results, and to move forward, in the coaching realm. But, and I got that job because my former D-line coach was assistant lacrosse coach at Army. It was a small world, and I got my foot in the door, and we ended up moving back to Ohio. I came back to Denison. We had some family health issues, and we had to get back to Ohio, where my wife is from, and that was just where I needed to be, and I stayed with Denison until 2013, until I resigned. I ended up doing another internship at Ohio State University, and again, as soon as I got back, I spent the summer at Ohio State and just learning as much as I could with Tom Palumbo, who for me was another mentor that really helped me. And just at any time you can get someone that can put things in a different perspective and at least be able to ask you why you're doing it and what you're doing it for. And I think that's the most important thing. And of course, I've just been fortunate to be around people that have been great influences for me. And I realized at that point, that last couple years at Denison, when I knew at some point, because I was doing strength and conditioning, I was doing football, I was teaching classes, I knew at some point I had to make a decision between, my family and everybody gets to that point. Everybody, there's an old saying, no one ever retires from strength and conditioning. Everybody gets fired or they quit. I mean, there's not a lot of people that can get last that time and start and actually retire as a strength coach. It's just, it's just kind of the way it is. And I knew I had to make a, for lack of better terms, a big boy decision, and it was hard to walk away. But I did realize the lessons I got from, my oldest daughter's godfather, Jack Kadem, who's, obviously he was the head football coach at Denison, and making sure that when you're coaching, it's not about you, it's about the people and everything you do. Is that really this drill or the the ass chewing that you're given right now? Is that about you, or is that really about, are you really trying to help your players, help your athletes? So I learned a lot about, who really is going to be the beneficiary of your actions, because, some words stick and some words slide off, and you're not the one that decides which words stick. So you got to make sure they all count. You got to make sure that they are for the benefit of the people you're speaking to, not for yourself. If you want to hear yourself talk, talk to yourself, but that's not how you should do business. And and it was a good transition. I ended up getting, I sent Dave Tate a letter saying, hey, listen, here's my situation, and they end up creating a position for me, and it was director of education, and that was a really good experience. And as you know this, Joel, like when you can step, the problem is with strength coaches is that you're in every day, you're just, you're waking up at, zero dark 30, and you're working and training athletes, and you're so focused and so single-minded on the benefiting your athletes, that you sometimes can't step away and really get a bigger picture. And I never had time to really talk and really kind of learn from a lot of people because I had my own thing I had to do. And when I was those 2 years of Elite FDS, and Dave gave me an opportunity, gave me a platform, and no one, you know, no one's able to just, okay, I'm gonna be popular. I'm gonna have, get respect. I mean, someone has to give you that opportunity. Someone has to allow you the platform in order to be able to make an impact on people. And Dave Tate gave me that opportunity, and I was able to help other coaches. I was able to get, a lot of relationships with those coaches that, and try to help them. And really, from my standpoint, there was not a lot of pressure that, I didn't have nothing to gain, but to be able to still help them, to me, that is really, I was still able to still be a part of coaching, still be a part of strength and conditioning, and still be able to step back and see some of the issues that were happening in our field without, and I was able to speak my mind because, you know what, I wasn't in it anymore. So I was kind of a, one of those, I didn't have as much invested as the strength coach that's going to work every day, that's trying to get along with all these sport coaches, and I wasn't in that situation. So I could express my, and I could be a focal point or a voice for some of the strength coaches, and that was a really good experience. And I resigned from Elite FDS last summer, and I'm a fifth grade Catholic school teacher now, and things go full circle, man. But I think, I mean, the only coaching I do now is my 6 and 7 year old soccer girls, and and then your focus goes from getting people to obviously, increasing their vertical and increasing their 40 times or decreasing their 40 times and getting their squat up. And now I'm just trying to get our girls to not hold hands during the game. And, it's, things just change, but at the same point, that's, I wouldn't be the person I am. The people that I've been able to interact with as a coach, and those relationships I had, and going to weddings, and, seeing these kids that, trying to get them to perform in the weight room, and all of a sudden now they're having children of their own, and it's really a rewarding experience. And I think that's why you coach, is for those reasons. So that's kind of like the whole, I probably just, what I was probably way more than you needed to know, but that's kind of the whole circle that I've went through. So and hopefully I'm able to still help. At some point I'm going to be irrelevant, but in the meantime, if I can help one coach, get a little more perspective on how he trains athletes, or how he's able to, or how she's able to balance this work-life thing that's really a tough sell for college athletics. I think I'm that's I'll be satisfied with that if I can help them.
Yeah, well, I know your work and your articles and your podcast with Elite FTS. I know that helped an awful lot of coaches, and it's great that you were able to kind of step away to be able to have more of a voice through that platform. And I'd imagine too, if you're once an educator, always an educator. It's just a little different context, right?
Yeah, sure.
So Yeah. Oh, I was going to say too, I kind of feel like you mentioned coaching kids. Sometimes I feel like every strength coach, regardless of whether they have kids or not, or expecting them, should have to coach kids at some point. I think you learned so much.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's for sure.
So anyways, I'd like to get to the next question then. And you've certainly been through a lot, of different avenues or had a lot of different jobs in your careers and strength coach. And you mentioned this quote in a recent article, is that we are a process-based profession in an outcome-based system. And if you could do three things, or maybe one or two or three things across the board to improve the way that strength coaches are evaluated in a scholastic setting or collegiate or high school or whatever, what would they be if this is even possible?
Yeah, and that was one of the one. I think 2 years back, I wrote the article, What's Really Wrong with Strength and Conditioning? And I think people were focusing maybe on the wrong things. And I think people were using that opportunity to rant and to make sure that people knew how hard they worked and how tough they had it and how much money they didn't make, and not realizing that you're a product of this environment where it's just the supply and demand of coaching is so unbelievably skewed and a disadvantage for coaches, that there are some external factors that no matter how hard you work, you're not going to be able to make a dent in it unless you get a lot of help anyway. And I think part of it was just kind of a reality. I think there's still some of those coaches out there, some of those young coaches that they shadow someone in the weight room, they get an exercise science degree, and they think they're ready to coach. And there's not too many other professions where you need to do a full-time unpaid internship in order to qualify for a full-time unpaid internship at a larger school. There's not too many, like I said, and I've talked about this with Ryan Horn. It's like there are some unpaid internships that require a master's degree and certifications for the simple fact that they're able to do that. They're able to, because that will, get the people that are real. There's still people out there that can't, they really want to do it. They have to hang on, and they have to be able to and willing to take those positions. I've had some former interns that, they had five unpaid internships before they end up getting, a full-time job. And that's just because they had the perseverance and they had some luck, along the way. I tell coaches all the time, it's like, listen, you have to, if you really want to do this, you have to do the necessary evils. Like, okay, so let's look at an exercise science degree. That's a level, that just gets you in the door. That does not, okay, if I get a law degree and I pass my bar, I can practice law. If you get an exercise science degree, it doesn't mean anything. And like one of the smartest guys I know, Trevor Cashy, we had talked at the Arnold one year, and he had made a great point that I didn't realize. Like, an exercise science degree doesn't mean you know how to exercise. It just means you know how exercise works. There's a difference between that. You can have an exercise science degree and not ever be able to pick up a bar off the floor with any technique whatsoever. You're not doesn't mean you're going to be a coach. And the same thing goes with certifications too. Certification doesn't mean, you can coach anybody. But if you're in a situation where, you're not going to be able to, not get certified because you think you don't need it, because all of a sudden, a certification will never get you a job, but it'll keep you from getting a lot of jobs. In fact, most jobs. And from a liability standpoint, and everything else. I think they have to require that. So you can argue it all you want to. If you don't want to get certified, you don't want an exercise science degree, get a business degree and open up your own place. And I think a lot of people are doing that because, and then they have their other headaches, and that's a different story. And then you have to, the third thing you have to do after you do those necessary evils is you got to volunteer, you got to work for free. And if that means you have to save up money, if that means you got to get a summer job to pay for another job as a strength coach, that's how it is. If you're not willing to do that, that's fine. Doesn't mean you're not ever going to make it. It just means that, I don't know how else you're going to get experience. I don't know how else, my friend Joe Holdsworth, who owns the Spot Athletics here in Columbus, and he said he has an internship program. And a lot of people make mistakes by trying to model a Division I strength and conditioning internship program at a private facility. And sometimes, a lot of times, it doesn't work. I've seen JL, you know, his internship, he made it work. I mean, there's people that make it work at the private facilities. Obviously, you know, Cressy, Mike Boyle, and a lot of people in Exos. I mean, a lot of people that make it work, you know. But it's tough. And the thing is, like, one thing he said was, why would I hire someone to do a job that I got to teach them how to do it? You know what I mean? And it's like, it's one of those things where, you know, most other professions, you hire someone with the assumption they know how to do the job. I get an exercise science degree and I get certified. I'm not necessarily going to get a job because I don't know how to do the job yet. I've never coached. Coaching is one of those experiences, one of those things. And me, I mean, I was a first year teacher at age 43, and believe me, it was such an eye-opening experience. And there's no other way. If I would have went back to school for 4 more years and retook every practice test and everything else, it still wouldn't have prepared me like that first year of teaching. The difference between year 1 and year 2 is unbelievable, because teaching and coaching, because they are, like we said, process-based, you know, that they're process-based, no matter what you talk about, wins and losses, whatever, but they're process-based. So the only way that you really can exceed in those fields when they're process-based is to get in those experience. And not only experience, but like John Maxwell says, you have to have evaluated experience. I sat there when I was the only strength, I was doing strength and conditioning for all sports, and I was the only full-time defensive staff member at a small Division III college. I'm talking to myself. I'm writing stuff on a board. Like, is this going to work? I don't know. I have no idea. Let me call buddy at another school that's not on our schedule, and let's talk shop. Because, you know, I mean, I'm talking to myself. You know, is this going to work? Evaluated experience is so important, because, and again, it humbles you, and it gives you an opportunity to really make, you know, take those evaluations. You have to be able to get outside people to look at you and see what you're doing. But I think that's part of the issue with, and I think this kind of goes with, you know, one of the biggest issues, the underlying issue, you know, strength coaches talk about, we don't get paid enough, we work too many hours, we don't get the respect. If football coach gets fired, so does the strength coach. Another football coach brings his own guy, there's no loyalty. I mean, there's all those different questions and all those different complaints that strength coaches have. But those are all the results of the underlying factor. And the underlying factor is, and I'll argue with anybody about this, is that they have not figured out a way to objectively evaluate strength and conditioning coaches. And they've tried. I mean, they've tried. And again, with all the numbers that come out right now, with all the data, you know, whether it comes at the GPS and heart rate variability, and I mean, you name it, there is a lot of modalities that you can collect data. And part of the issue with a lot of those is that you're not speaking coach language, right? When you talk about velocity-based training and you're talking about GPS and you're talking about all these things, and you tell a coach, like, listen, based on the GPS, based because you got, you know, we talked to Tom Izlinski of the Jaguars the one year at the NSCA conference, and you know, he made it, you know, you have 8 wide receivers on your roster, and you're running practice, and you have 2 of them injured. Well, now think about the percentage of the yardage that is increased by those 6 wide receivers running all the reps, because head football coach, offensive coordinator, is not going to delete reps. They're not going to cut their reps down because I have only 6 wide receivers. So all the data that you present, and this is why I like Bob Vallejo's interview that I did, was you have to be able to relate that to what a football or what a sport coach understands. You know, this is what this means. You know, you test the basketball team every 2 or 3 weeks in a weight room on their vertical, right? And you could say, listen, this decrease in power is based on this decrease in strength, which, again, coach, every single one of your players are not jumping as high as they were at the beginning of the season. And you have to give those data that means something to the coach, not just data just so you can impress everybody with your data and your charts and everything. It has to make sure that you can put that in a language that a sport coach can understand. And I hope this doesn't offend anybody, but the sport coaches, number one, they don't comprehend what some of the strength coaches are looking at as performance-based, and they don't want to comprehend because that's not their job. They have enough to worry about. So with all that data, they still, there's no really way that you can say, okay, this strength coach is a good strength coach, whatever that means, compared to this other strength coach based on what. And one of the articles I wrote, I just listed all the things. And like I said, if you're basing a strength coach on one rep maxes, listen, if my salary is based on one rep max, I'm gonna make sure everybody got their one rep maxes up. And I can do that, and I know when I first got to Tulsa, they had some of the record boards up there, and they had a 920 squat on there, and Grizz was like, take that down. Because all of a sudden now that ruins the whole integrity of everything you're doing. And so you're looking at one rep maxes, you're looking at wins. I don't want to be attached to win losses. I don't want to be attached to injury rates. I don't want the blame for injury rates, because again, that's when I first got to Army, we had some ACL issues with women's soccer when I got there. Well, what happened was, I mean, this was right when I got there, and this was all of a sudden we're trying to implement some pretty intense, posterior chain dominant programming, and maybe that doesn't match up with what they've done before. I don't think they're ready for that. Am I going to take the blame for it? I don't think so. But of course, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I'm this is not good. I need to do something about this. But at the same time, if you're blaming strength coaches for injuries, there's a lot of other factors involved in that. I don't think you want to, you can just base it on that. There's too many other factors involved. And you go through the list and, record or, point differential in the fourth quarter and conditioning. You can, but it really doesn't go back to objectively evaluating what the strength coach is about or what he can do. Because, frankly, all those factors in the long run aren't indicative of the job that the strength coach does. And I think that that's really one thing we have. So, until you can say, okay, this strength coach, and again, here's the other problem too, to all that happens. The people that are hiring strength coaches, they're not hiring strength coaches based on their ability to train athletes. They don't know. That's the one thing when I remember when I've been fortunate enough to have some interviews. And if you're interviewing for a head strength coach at a small school or a high school, most likely you're being interviewed by people that don't know half as much as you or a quarter of as much as you about sports performance. So what you're trying to do now is not talk down to them and try to make sure that they can relate to what you're saying. As opposed to if you're an assistant track coach and you're interviewing with the head track coach, even if he's not a sprint guy and you are, he's gonna know. He's gonna know enough as a head coach to know whether what you're saying is valid. And I think strength and conditioning, it's one of those weird professions where the people that are hiring you don't know whether they can evaluate you. So for me, as an athletic director, I don't know the difference between Coach A and Coach B. I don't have the knowledge base, and I'm not invested enough to know that this coach is better than the last coach we had, based on what. And I think that's one of the underlying problems. And I think that we have to come up with ways to not sell ourselves, but to be able to bruise, here's some of our goals. I mean, and this is a couple things like that I said. You say talk about three things. I don't know if I have three things, but one thing that strength coaches need to do is number one, understand that it is a process. And I think sometimes when you have a practice plan as a sport coach, this is what we're going to accomplish. This is our goals. This is what we need to do better based on film or based on, numbers, based on, and sports like track and swimming are a little easier because they're stopwatch sports, right? That's the best sport to be a strength coach in is track and field, because whether things are going in the right direction or not based on, because it's numbers. There's not too many sports that are that objective. There's always some subjectivity, with batting order or position or opponent, whatever. So I think having some goals, because what happens is what everybody thinks is happening from a strength and conditioning perspective is what in strength and conditioning coaches fall into that. How many times have I said, I'm just trying to get these athletes through? I got seven teams from 4:30 to 6:30. I got to get them through. We just got to get them, get their workout in, done, and out. And all of a sudden, what goals do we accomplish? They got their workout done, right? So it's no different than a sport coach, a basketball coach would never give their practice plan to the team and say, "All right, you guys, this is what you're doing today." Right? You never take your take your no matter what, even if the track athletes know exactly the volume they're going to have, the exact at rest intervals, whatever the technical drills are going to do, they would never do it by themselves because that's not what coaching is about. But yes, strength and conditioning, we just need to work. Just give me the workout. And all of a sudden, now we would be limited to sets and reps. And what we have to do is come up with ways to, even if it's subjective, be able to produce, okay, this is what we're doing from a qualitative analysis standpoint. This is athlete A, week one. This is athlete A doing the same exercise in week eight. Do you understand the difference? Do you understand the positions? And of course, the sport coach might not. There's nothing worse than trying to do all these tests and the sport coach doesn't care. But at the same time, establish some goals so that when you come into the weight room, for an example, these are the technical goals we're gonna try to accomplish. These are the pace or the tempo goals we're trying to do. We're a little bit too much. Our rest intervals between these two exercises are too long. These are the technical goals, the tempo goals, and the cultural type goals. This is what we're trying to get after. This is the leadership behaviors that we are trying to not only have our older athletes model, but reward. And I think, sometimes coaches have gone, all of a sudden, instead of getting in a weight room and doing the basic things really well, some sport coaches are pressuring these strength coaches to, all right, let's pretend they're Navy SEALs and let's do like a boot camp workout to make them tougher. Let's have them, grab a stick and wrestle it. Whoever gets the stick is tougher than the other. I mean, does that really mean they're gonna hit a free throw at the end of the game? Does that really mean they're gonna take on the ISO block? Does that really mean when they gotta dig down, at the end of a race, they're really gonna get it through? I don't know. And all of a sudden, we've come up with all these different ways besides the main way, and that's getting stronger, more explosive, more resilient, more durable athletes. And so, all of a sudden, if you want to do, boot camp work, you want to do a Navy SEAL workout, like Dan John had told me, like first step is to join the Navy, and then you can do a Navy SEAL workout, like all you want. But that's not you're not we're not doing that. We're playing volleyball or. We're a men's lacrosse team, and let's get strong and fast and explosive, to help us be better lacrosse players. And what are we doing from an individual basis, and what goals are we setting? Is our pace where it needs to be? Are we taking care of? Hey, we're not getting our elbows through on some of our hand cleans, whatever. Have we been able to address that? Have we identified the issue? Have we addressed it? And can we assess that, yes, we are better at this? I've seen it's better. Even if it's, even if it's just an informal type assessment, now I can document those. Because at the end of the day, what everybody else that's paying you money as a strength coach thinks you're doing is unlocking a weight room, putting sets and reps on a board, and yelling. And you know as well as I do, Joel, that that's not what we do. That's not what we do on a track. That's not what we do in the weight room. That's not what we do. Anything. That's not never what we do. Whether it's throwing a med ball or doing a band TKE or doing a rack pull, it doesn't matter. They're being coached on everything. But most people that are paying you don't understand that. And I think the last thing, besides setting goals and besides really looking at using your technology to really, having a qualitative analysis of improvement, not just numbers, but actual looking at the athlete move. Video is amazing, especially for non-track athletes where you're not as technical and, just the simple fact that they're doing a 5-10-5 and they're not taking three steps before they, attack the other line and, different things like that. Just that analysis, the goal setting, those are some of the things that those are the two things that really need to change. And the third thing would be getting more people involved, right? How many times? I mean, there's some coaches that never step foot in a room. They have no idea. They don't want to know. They don't want to know. But at the end of the day, when you get another job offer, right? Or they get someone from a you know, they get something in your ear because this is the way another team does it or whatnot. Well, they don't know. That's what I always understood. If it, you know, especially at the Division III level, or and again, small school level, high school level, they don't want to do. We don't want to do those kind of workouts. We don't want to do football workouts. I'm not doing football workouts for anybody. This is, I do football workouts for football, and it's still as general. I mean, it's still a basic template. But how do you know you don't want to do my workout? Can you explain to me what our workout is about? You know, do me a favor, head coach, of a sport. Tell me exactly what your athletes are doing to physically prepare themselves for this week. Can that sport coach say that? Can you answer that question? Probably not. You have no idea. But what you can do is make sure that they are involved. Make sure that they are as, you know, as much as a witness to the work and what you're doing. The coaches have to see you coach, because all of a sudden they're going to make that relationship. They're going to make that connection between, listen, this is no different. You know, whether you're breaking skills down. So, you know, the whole part whole, I know Vern Gambetta talked about that, one of the conference that we spoke at, and, you know, taking the whole thing, modeling that, you know, seeing this is a technique, right? So it doesn't matter if it's boxing out on a layup. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, taking a shot in field hockey. It doesn't matter. All right, we're going to move this hang snatch movement, right? I'm going to model it, and then we're going to go ahead and break it down and break down those individual skills. We're going to use some tactile cues to make sure that the athlete understands it, because some athletes can see it and do it. A lot of athletes can't. And, you know, again, like my friend JL said, if they can't feel it, they can't fix it. And then you're going to go ahead and build up to the hole again. Can those other people that are paying you to do your job see you doing that? So I know that was a longer answer, but those would be three things. You know, set goals, analyze visually, and then make sure that you're getting as many people involved in the process, to have an open door and invite people to your workouts, and make sure they can see and they can be a part of it.
Awesome. Yeah, a long answer, but an awesome one, because I think it synthesized so many of the great articles that you've written on the subject, and just those the conciseness in those three. I think it makes it easy for us to apply too, and so amazing stuff. Mark, I want to go a maybe slightly different direction, same ballpark, but how do we properly harness the idea of competition to bring out the best in our young men and women we coach? I mean, you know, we hear winning is everything. How do we balance that versus a lot of the other ideals that we might be trying to approach in the weight room, or whoever we're working with?
Yeah, I think some of it you have to reevaluate what you mean by winning and what you mean by success. And I think that, you know, I think that, you know, what happens when those goals aren't met, whether they're a win, whether they're, you know, an all conference, whether they're whatever they are, what happens when they're not met, and what, you know, how do you really define success? You know, and again, as a coach, you can't continually harp on this, but, you know, I know that a successful athlete is someone that, you know, all of a sudden, after they're done playing, they become, you know, they're a good husband, or a good wife, or they're a good father, they're a good mother. They're, you know, they're somebody that people want to hire, people want to be a part of. They're someone that impacts others. Your impact is staying with them. That's success. That's even harder to measure. And I think, you know, competition is great. I think it really is. And I think sometimes we've skewed that competition, like I talked about before. It's like, you know, we've gone, and I think it's good. I think, you know, people that have these competitions, and I like it when they you know, they have some different things and have some fun things for the athlete. And it's, you know, when they have like these longer competitions over the course of like spring, and they include like community service in there, and you know, they include academics, they include all these different things. And I think it's good, it's healthy. I love when you can draft teams. And I love when teams can be in there where they can see where they're drafted. You know, I have a, you know, all of a sudden you got a backup right guard that gets drafted before everybody, because everybody knows he's gonna, you know, put everything he needs to put into it. I think that's important. I think you gotta be careful as well. I think the individual competitions, when I was at Denison, every Friday we have a strongman Grand Prix. So instead of doing a strongman competition and it would take a whole day, we would just, every week was a different event, and we'd alternate them. So it was really a clean and press type event. We'd use an axle, a log, a, you know, a thick, you know, a thick handle dumbbell, and we'd alternate that with, you know, we'd always end up with a tire flip medley, but we'd have farmer's walk, we have yoke walk, whatever, you know. And obviously we're always nervous because it's different, and you know, you never want anyone to get hurt or doing any of those things. But that was always good, and the kids loved it. They really did, and they, you know, but maybe there was those kids in the same weight class that knew there was no way they would be able to win, and you know, there was no way they would be able to, you know, to win that strongman. So, but it was still, it didn't mean, you know, you still got out that competitive spirit out of them. The one thing with female athletes and women's teams, the individual competitions never worked as well as I want them to. They always work better when you split them up in teams. And there was some, you know, Blair Wagner, he's up at Washington right now, but he's the head coach at Eastern Michigan. I learned a lot from him. You know, they do the three-man or four-team tug-of-war. You know, you wrap the ropes on a tire, and so you have the tire in the middle, and, you know, they have teams that can tug-of-war that way. You have three-man pull-ups where two guys are holding a bar, another person to pull one up, and four, you know, fire team push-ups we did in the Marine Corps. You know, those things are always great. I think they, you know, it's just because, again, it has to have some kind of result. If you're not, you know, the competition thing is the same thing with sprints. I think coaches got away from, you know, everybody wants to see the time on the stopwatch, and they want them to wrestle, you know, to have competition. But what happened to just lining up two of your best players and making them race? What happened to that? You know, and that's so we got to that toward the end, and we got, you know, we still, John Sisson, who was at Vanderbilt at the time, you know, in University of Missouri, Brian Mann, and they did, you know, when Pat Ivey was there, they did, you know, basically they'd line up their guys and they'd race them, and the last guy, the last place guy, got bumped on to the next line, and the first place guy, you know, he gets bumped up a line, and then they have different people racing, and those were the type of things. Because again, if I tell someone to run, you know, 6 30-yard dashes, you know, are they going to run full speed? But if you put someone next to them and you have coaches watching them, that's a different avenue. So I think competition is needed, and I think you have to be very sensitive to what is going to work. And just because someone's going to be a competitor when they get a squat bar on their back doesn't mean that they're going to be a competitor on the field. People want to make that equation. I think the confidence is huge, and Joe Ken talked about that too, about being in a weight room, the confidence is the most important thing. But don't get it twisted that, you know, just because, you know, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to try to jump on a higher box, you know, and try to, you know, keep my shins from bleeding, that I'm going to actually be able to, you know, take on, you know, someone on the field, or, you know, so I think you have to be careful with it. But the competition, I think it's huge, and I think people, athletics are great because people learn about what they learn about themselves. They learn who they are as people, and that's where they really learn that they have to count on other people, that people are depending on them. And I think as soon as you get to the point where you have people that don't make excuses, that don't blame others, because as soon as you blame someone else, you've lost the ability to change. So you can't be better because you blame someone else. You get people that are accountable for their own actions, and they truly care about the person next to them, and they're doing it because of that person next to them. That's where you have to kind of try to get to. If you don't have the talent to win games, not much you can do about it. But if you get that point where you can get the most out of those teams, the teams that are unselfish, the teams that are doing it for the player next to them and not for the player, you know, that they are. I think that's, and it's, and I don't think anybody's figured it out totally. Well, some people have a good, pretty good idea about it, but not everybody's figured it out. If they did, they would just, everybody would copy. But that's something that, because every team is different, every team dynamic's different. And I think when you have, like Chris Doyle said, when I, you know, at the podcast, it's like the number one thing he has to do for freshmen is reverse the recruiting process. Go from, we need you, we want you, you have to be here, you're going to be part of, you know, this is, you know, we're going to pull out all the stops to impress you about our university. And when you get here, you're just like everybody else. I tell my fifth graders, like, I care about you. I care about you as people. I care about you as students, but you're not special. You're not special. And I think when people understand that, you know, they can be humble enough to identify that. I think it's a first step. So that would be my thing, how competition kind of works with getting people better. And again, learning from losing is, people are afraid to fail because everybody's got, you know, everybody's going to put on YouTube. Everybody's going to, you know, they all of a sudden you have one-on-one and someone, I mean, just practice. One-on-ones of practice ends up showing up on Instagram. People are afraid to fail because all of a sudden you're going to be Instagram famous. And it's like that's, but that's a part of it. That's what you have to, you know, you have to deal with. But so I don't think I have the answers for all of that, but that's kind of where I start.
Awesome. I think it's a little bit of a gray area myself. I really liked your points about using healthy competition practice, and then also it's you know, it's healthy when you go home and you are a, you know, a great father, husband, friend. I mean, the stuff that goes beyond the game. So a question I'm really excited to ask you, Mark, is, and I've heard you write about this, and you just actually alluded to it in the first question that you answered, is how do you realize if you are coaching for yourself or for your athletes?
Well, I think other people have to kind of notice that for you. I think that, you know, I always say, you know, don't steal the spotlight from someone you're trying to spotlight. And I think when the private sector, it's come up quite frequently where all of a sudden, you know, you're getting tagged, but your coach is tagging you because I want everybody to know that this kid scored a touchdown and he trains at our facility. You know, and that's something that happens in the private sector all the time. It's like, what about just texting a kid and saying congrats, you know? I mean, and that's what, you know, that's the one thing in the private sector that you see is like, you know, are you, as an athlete, you have to ask yourself, is my coach using me to get more clients? Right? I mean, is he using my success so he can get more athletes to come train at his facility or her facility? And that's the one thing that I think happens. I think it's the one thing that's kind of sad, but that's just where we're at. You know, and I think that it goes back to Joe Erman wrote a book, Inside Out Coaching. He was a keynote speaker at the NSCA a few years back, and he talks about transactional versus transformational. You know, what are you trying to get out of this? And there's a lot of people. I mean, we have a lot of athletes that try to, you know, we try to get them to do the tricks and do the look at this. He, you know, look at this kid that I train. He had to hook a running start across the gym, jump up on a 60-inch, you know, box or bumpers that are stacked up, you know, and he had to knee himself in the face in order to land there. But look at him, look at this 60-inch box. And, you know, guess what? There's no world records for box jumps. There's not. Like, okay, just you get your vertical, you know, or broad jump or whatever. There's no world records for box jumps, buddy. You know, this is not how it works. I mean, that may be, you know, getting you some attention or more clients or whatever, but and I think that's what are you trying to get out of that? Are you really trying to, you know? And again, I think it goes back to answer those questions. Is this young man or young woman, are they in a better position now than they were before I worked with them? You know, Jack Haydom had always said, you know, if you took a team and you didn't have any coaches there, and they just coached themselves and they went through the game, would they be better off without you? Are you making calls for your ego? I've been there. I've made that mistake. You know what I mean? It's like, what's something? It's, well, you know, that's we don't have the personnel to do that. And you put your players in a bad position. You know, and it took me a long time to realize, like, you know, this is not about me. This is about us, other people depending on you. And I think it's one of those, you know, are they really, you know, it goes back to, and I think, you know, someone had said, you know, if you're coaching and all of a sudden, you know, you're not that player's coach anymore, are they better off without you? You know, are you humble enough and to really admit that and really to really kind of look deep and try to really figure that out? Like, what am I doing to help this person? Are they better off? And it's not just about numbers. It's not just about, you know, and it's like, you know, I always go back saying it's not what you make them do. And you can make them do anything you want to, especially when they trust you. You know, and I learned that from Grizz and Scott Swanson, and you know, your athletes will run through a wall for you. If you have your athletes, if you want to sprint them, you know, till their legs fall off, they will do it because they believe in you and they trust you, and they know that you have, you know, that they know that what you're doing is going to is in their best interest. You know, but you can make athletes do anything you want to, especially if you package it right, you know, with your knowledge. But it's not what you can make them do. It's who they become because of you. They're gonna develop, they're gonna change. Everybody's not the same person they were when they first, you know, when they first get to you, especially with the private sector, when you get some kids that are 10 and all of a sudden they're in college and you're still training them. They're gonna be different, they're gonna evolve as people. Is that they're going to be better people, but is that because of you or in spite of you? And you have to answer that question. Like, what have I done to help this person? And I struggle with it every day. I struggled every day. Am I really, is this really what this young person needs? And I think that's really, and I struggle with it as coaches, and I look at all the missed opportunities I had, and man, that was a teachable moment. I wish I would have handled that a little differently. And I think if you know that you're answering those questions, if you're looking back, if you're able to, here's the questions you have to ask. Do you have those regrets? Do you wish you would have done things a little differently? Just by saying that doesn't mean you're a bad coach. It means that you're conscious of the coach that you were compared to the coach that you are. And the second thing is, how many athletes are you still in contact with? How many former athletes are you still in contact with? If you're a coach and you don't ever talk to any of your athletes, or I talk to more of my former athletes than more of my former teammates, just because of our relationship was different. Because I was a better person, I was more a selfless person. It wasn't because I wasn't closer to them. I was much closer to my teammates and friends, but I was such a selfish person when I was in high school in the Marine Corps and when I was first in college, that I wasn't able to connect with people. Being a selfless person and trying to be a better person and thinking about others first allowed me to develop relationships that were more meaningful. So the older I got, the more meaningful relationships I have. I have relationships with some of the interns I had, at Elite FTS. I consider them, great friends, just because I was able to tear down all this bravado, transactional interactions, and really care about what was in it for them. And I think that's part of it. I was able to be a better person, so those relationships I had with the people around me were better. So that would be one of those things that I would probably say is that, the more you care about them, the better relationship you're going to have. Are you concerned with the people you're working with? Are they better because of you? And who are they becoming because of your guidance? And that's, I think, the question you have to ask.
Awesome. I love it. It resonates a little bit with me. I think in my own experience, I used to be a track coach more and strength coach kind of on the side. And then transitioning to full-time strength coach. And I feel like I needed that path to go from the coach to support coach to help me learn to put my ego to the side a little bit. And it's been so important to me. And it's just so awesome to hear you talk about that as well. And it's something I'm still learning every day. I still make mistakes every day as well. And I'm continually learning in that. So thank you for those answers. I have one more question. It's actually a follow-up to that. And maybe you already hit on it a little bit, but what are some keys to leaving a lasting impact on the athletes you coach after their time with you is over?
It really is. I think that the keys to any time that you're coaching or dealing with people, I think there's a couple things that people are missing. I think because of social media and because of our society, I think it's changing. The one thing that happens is that we are, I always say, would you, this conversation you're having over Twitter, this argument you're having over Twitter, if you were having over a beer in person, would it be the same conversation? Would you be acting the same? And I think sometimes we put up these shields because we're trying, and I can't remember where I heard this, but we're trying to win the argument. And you don't have to win the argument. There's no keeping score in the argument instead of trying to win the person. And I think that that's one of those things that, you're trying to win that person's. It doesn't matter if their opinion is not the same as yours or if they disagree with you. Win the person. Don't win the argument because it doesn't matter. They're not keeping, no one's keeping score, and all they're going to do is resent it. So win the person first. And I think people, because of social media, the opinion, people will spew out opinions, whether regardless of who is listening or because people want to be heard. I think we've got to this point, but there's so much noise around us that we're trying to scream over all these other. Out of all these, over everyone else's noise, and that we don't sit back and listen and really even hear what we're saying to ourselves. So I think the key, number one, first and foremost, is always humility. And I think people think humility is weak. Or I'm humble. Or I'm weak. I'm just, I, and like C.S. Lewis said, humility is not thinking less of yourself. Humility is thinking of yourself less. And that's And that sticks. And every time it sticks. And I don't care if you're, if like my daughter's, my oldest daughter's 7, you know, or someone at 77, it still can stick. Humility is something you can always continue to strive for. And I don't think we have enough of it. The other thing is empathy. And I think empathy, people get it confused with sympathy. That you have to feel bad for somebody. No, it's not, you're not feeling, sympathy is feeling, you know, bad for somebody or and empathy is not that. Empathy is putting yourself in their shoes. And I think a coach without empathy is, you know, you have a coach that all of a sudden, you know, doesn't know what it's like for a young man to come in his program who's never had a dad, who's never had a positive male role model in his life. And all of a sudden, the first thing you're going to do is scream at him. You know, you have young ladies that, you know, they've gotten everything they've wanted, and all of a sudden you're going to be the one that says, you know, listen, that's not how we do business here. That takes love more than anything, to be able to have that, you know, to be able to be honest with them and to put yourself in their shoes and understand what they're going through. And the other thing is like, the third thing and final thing is, I think we try to get people to behave the way we want to. This is I think, a strength coach mistake. We try to get people to behave the way we want. We want them to become the people they want to be. We want them to be a part of everything we're doing. But first, we have to make sure that they understand that they are welcome and they belong. If I think that I belong with you, that I can trust you and I can be part of what you're doing. You know, hey, you got to buy into what we're doing. Well, you haven't even invited me to, you don't even treat me as one of your own. I can't buy into what you're doing when I don't, you're not even including me in what it is that we're supposed to accomplish. So make people belong first, and then from there, you can get them to be who you want them to be and become who they're capable of becoming because they belong to what you're trying to do. And I think that would be the thing that's more important than anything else. So those three things: humility, empathy, and getting them to understand and getting them to belong first. Those are the three things I think we need as coaches.
That's awesome. And they don't teach you that in that exercise science degree, do they?
No, they don't.
It would be nice. Thanks so much for being on the show today, Mark. Really appreciated it. And thank you so much for taking time to share your experience and knowledge, wisdom with us all. And I learned an awful lot. And so thanks again.
Joel, I really appreciate having me on. I mean, this is, it's always humbling, for people to that, you know, to allow me to give me a platform to kind of speak about my experiences and my mistakes, and you know, hopefully if it helps one person. And again, to be on the show, I mean, I know that, you know, you had Boo on there, Jeff Moyer, you know, Carl, Ryan Horn, and like to be in part of the, you know, some of those guys and with the company that. You know, the website, you had sent me about a year or so back. You'd sent me a copy of one of your ebooks. Everything you're doing, you know, on the website is just outstanding, and you're really getting a solid product to a lot of people that really can benefit from it. So keep up the great work with that. It's an honor to be a part of the show, and like I said, I know, and being having you know having a former podcast at Elite FTS, I know how much work it takes. To get all this stuff and get all this stuff ready, people don't understand how much work it is really behind the scenes for these podcasts, and your ability to kind of get those questions out there really, you know, really good thing, and expect some good big things from Just Five Sports. So I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate it again having you on the show today. So have a good one, Mark.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in with us today. And please, again, visit our sponsor, simplyfaster.com, sellers of elite training technology, K-Box, 1080 Sprint, GymAware. Great stuff. Check it out. Next week, we're going to be coming at you with Cal Dietz, a podcast that I have been looking forward to making for weeks, and you guys are going to love it. I can't wait to get it out there for y'all. So we'll see you then.